Today's episode of Behind the Numbers is brought to you by Haefely Flanagan. Haefely Flanagan is a full-service accounting firm that's been serving our clients since 1967. We are not your typical accounting firm. Our services extend well beyond tax and audit to include valuation services, strategic and succession planning, leadership development, and more. When you work with Haefely Flanagan, we help you realize your long-term goals. Learn more at hfco.com or call 856-722-5300.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to Behind the Numbers. This is a show where we dig deeper to understand what really matters most in business. My name is Dave Bookbinder, and I'm Executive Director of Valuation Services at Haefely Flanagan, who is sponsoring this episode today. And we're going to be talking about valuing your business. And I'm pleased to welcome my colleague and partner, Ken May, who's a partner at Haefely Flanagan. Ken, Hi. Welcome to Behind the Numbers.
Great. Thanks, Dave. I'm glad to be here with you.
We're going to be talking about my favorite subject, valuing your business. But before we jump into that, tell the audience a little bit about who you are and who you typically serve.
Hi, I'm Ken. I have been with Haefely for 20 years, and I've done my whole career there. My biggest focus is client service. So I have worked in everything, tax, accounting, business valuation, litigation services, support, forensics, advisory. I am leading our consulting division at the moment, and working closely with Dave in valuation, and I like that variety. So,
yeah, and you've got a credential in valuation. You're a certified valuation analyst. So let's jump into it. Let's start by talking about why companies typically need a valuation, Ken.
You know, it varies. So from a valuation perspective, I've had clients call me. They just want to know the number of what their business is worth. I've had clients call me and say they want to gift shares in their business to the next generation or to a family member for estate tax purposes. I have had clients want to sell their business and learn what their valuation is. And there's a number of other reasons too. If you're thinking about doing an ESOP, you need a valuation of the business. If you're acquiring another company, you may need a valuation or similar services to allocate purchase prices. And I mean, the list just goes on and on for what you may or may not need a valuation for.
Yeah, I made a short list here too, and you've covered most of them, but stock-based compensation, if you're granting stock options or any kind of equity awards in the business, you need to know what the business is worth. Sometimes it's not a good or positive reason. Sometimes litigation happens and you need to get a number on your business. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess I kind of forgot that one. Divorces happen, business divorces happen. It can be so that if someone is a estranged shareholder, they may be looking to get out and they haven't been getting paid and they want money. So yes, litigation happens. I do get involved in those, and it's not necessarily my favorite thing because people aren't necessarily happy over that reason.
Yeah, I much rather work with business owners and executives in private equity, for example, rather than dealing with judges and lawyers. But that's just me. I want to talk to you about the value proposition, if you will. Unfortunately, in our profession in valuation, much like the same thing with accountants and lawyers, people think we're a commodity. I've often said that nobody wakes up tomorrow and says they want to know what their business is worth, wait for it, and they're willing to spend 10 or 20 grand to get the real answer. They're usually trying to do another thing. And in that process, the accountant or the attorney says you need your business valued. But there really is value in the valuation beyond just checking a box or being a file stuffer. Why don't you talk to that?
So I think that there's, I guess, a bunch of different factors here. So I'll start with, knowing a value on your business is important for two reasons in this sector. One, there are people who work in their business and treat it as a paycheck. They're not thinking of their business as an asset yet. And understanding that value of your business being an asset really will help you in the decisions you make in your business strategically. It's very important for you to understand, okay, I have a business worth X and I want to make it worth Y. Once you understand that it's worth X and here are some things that you can change to get it to Y from a financial perspective, then you can work on that. So I think that that's, a big one in that regard. I think another one is that for what we talked about before, everybody should always be thinking about their succession, and particularly in family-owned businesses, and what they really want to get out of it. So one of the things we do at Hayfleet is try to look at everything holistically, make sure that the business is functioning properly, make sure that the owners are functioning properly, and then also making sure that, you know, in their succession planning, that they're going to get everything they need out of the business. And you really need to understand the value and all of the things that affect your value to be able to handle those three things and be able to treat them appropriately.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about things that affect value in a minute here, but let's start by talking about valuation methods, if you don't mind. A lot of folks approach me, like you mentioned, they have an idea of what their business is worth, and they use methodologies that I like to refer to as the back of the napkin method and the back of the envelope method. They're not real valuation methodologies. What methodologies do we use to value businesses?
So I'll add one thing to what you said. I have been involved in litigation and litigation support with valuation involved. And we did have somebody come against us as an expert on the other side whose expertise was, I know what this business is worth. I've sold a business just like it. So, you know, you can add that one into the list of potentially bad valuation methods. So, you know, there's three ways to look at the value of a company: an asset method, an income method, and a market method. An asset method is typically extremely helpful if you have a lot of hard assets or potential IP, trademarks, things of those nature, where your assets of your business are worth a substantial amount and may be worth more than your income. The income method looks at both historic and projected future cash flows that you would expect and comes to a way to capitalize that and come up with, say, what somebody would be willing to pay for those future cash flows. And then a market method looks at other businesses that were sold and comes to the conclusion of, hey, where do I fall in this range of comparable businesses, and how do we value my business utilizing those numbers? Today, the market method, if you can use it, is the most valued from the IRS if you're doing it for estate and gift tax purposes. It's also a little bit more indicative of a real price, I think, in today's market, just sheerly because the pandemic created such wild multiples. And now, as interest rates are on the rise, the income method is maybe less than what people are actually getting in the marketplace. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
That's interesting. So I'll just add to the market approach. You alluded to transactions as another way to think about it as well. And it's a kind of a guideline company method. And the idea being there, if you're a privately held business, I can't buy shares in your company, but if I want to participate in that industry and get the upside potential and the commensurate downside risk, I could own a basket of publicly traded companies that do similar things. And they all trade at valuation multiples. I would say that the income approach is typically the best methodology. Mm-hmm. The market approaches are certainly important, but valuation is a forward-looking exercise. And folks watching and listening, if you take nothing else away from this, remember that valuation is forward-looking. It's great what you did last year, but what does the future like? That's what buyers really want to know. That's what investors want to know. So being able to map out that future and bring it back to today's dollars is key, which leads me to a second point on this future forecast thing. Most business owners are not really sophisticated at forecasting, if they do it at all. And then if they do attempt it, especially if they're thinking about a sale, that's when you see something called the hockey stick forecast. You want to talk about forecasting and what you're seeing with clients?
So I don't even know how to say this in a way that, you know, many clients...
Just remember you're on camera.
I know, exactly. Many clients want to say that the next year is going to be the best year. And while what Dave said is correct, it doesn't matter what you've done in the past. If historically you are, you know, trending upward on a line, it's probably not likely that all of a sudden that line is going to go like this. And the reality is, you know, unless you've made substantial changes in your business, that's not going to happen. So you have to really temper forecasts that are prepared with, you know, best case scenario. We, you know, one of the things, like thinking back to college in my finance classes, you would have the probability matrix, and you would use that to kind of weight things, you know, from a, you know, weighted average method. And it would be, you know, what's the likelihood of this happening? 5%. What's the likelihood of the normal happening? 80%. And what's the likelihood of something negative happening? You know, 15%. Well, if you only have a 5% chance of that hockey stick actually happening, then yeah, that could be a problem if that's what you're forecasting in the future. And typically buyers are going to see through that if you're trying to sell your business.
Yeah. And usually you'll be called out by somebody who's helping you, either your valuation professional or your merger and acquisition advisor. They'll certainly flag that. Ken, for folks who are watching and listening, if they want to learn more about you or how they can work with you, what's the best way for them to get in touch with you?
So the best way is probably my email, kenmay, ken.may@hfco.com. That's H is in Harry, F is in Frank, C is in Charlie, O is in Oscar.com.
Great. We only have a couple of minutes to go here before we have to take a commercial break, but I want to circle back on this market approach for valuation and talk about the ubiquitous EBITDA multiple. A lot of business owners are at cocktail parties and they're talking with someone, like you said, who sold their business, and they'll tell them, for example, well, your business will sell for, make a number up, 6x EBITDA, 8x EBITDA. Can you speak to the miracle of the EBITDA multiple?
So the miracle of the EBITDA multiple is it sometimes holds true and it sometimes doesn't, I guess. And it's a lot of it dependent on your business. So when you look at those market methods and you're pulling these EBITDA numbers and the multiples that you use, there are different quartiles. There's a whole, you know, matrices that you look at. And depending on where the business falls, I mean, there could be businesses selling for a 3x multiple and a 12x multiple. And to just pick a random number on there and say, oh, I've done this before, I sold my business for X, it doesn't always hold true in every instance. I find that to be scary when people think that it does, because it makes our job more difficult. You know, we're the experts from a standpoint of we have the credentials, we've done a lot of work in it, we've seen a lot of businesses sell in many different markets, and it's always hardest to walk somebody back from what they have a very hard set thought of than it is to just educate from the beginning.
So. Yeah. And if you're out there watching, listening, and curious to know more about the EBITDA multiple, I actually wrote an article. It's about the EBITDA multiple and how it's not exactly the silver bullet evaluation. So I unpack a little bit more of what you're just describing in that piece. We have to take a quick commercial break. Ken, don't go anywhere. You watching and listening, don't go anywhere either. We'll be right back after we pay a few bills.
Today's episode of Behind the Numbers is brought to you by Haefely Flanagan. Haefely Flanagan is a full-service accounting firm that's been serving our clients since 1967. We are not your typical accounting firm. Our services extend well beyond tax and audit to include valuation services, strategic and succession planning, leadership development, and more. When you work with Haefely Flanagan, we help you realize your long-term goals. Learn more at hfco.com or call 856-722-5300.
And welcome back to Behind the Numbers. I'm Dave Bookbinder, and we're talking about valuing your business. And my guest today is Ken May, who is also a colleague of mine and a partner at Haefely Flanagan. Ken, a lot of good ground covered in that first segment. We talked about the market-based, the income-based approach, which is forward-looking, and we're taking economic benefits into the future, bringing them back to today's dollars at an appropriate rate of risk. So I want to talk about risk, because in valuation, anything that you're able to do to mitigate the risk, reduce that risk, will increase your value. So let's talk about some of the things that impact value and also impact risk.
So this list could go on and on. There are so many risks in a business. You know, the market itself, technology today is probably the biggest risk, and not staying on top of it. You'll see so many companies have folded over the years because they really didn't stay on top of it. I mean, you can tell just recently with Sears in the past couple of years and Kmart, you know, they didn't stay on top of the fact that hey, Amazon is disrupting the market and they didn't do anything to change it. They sold off all their in-house best brands. They lost all their best, you know, IP, and now they're gone because of it. And that was a staple of American history for how many decades?
Right.
I think one of the biggest risks that I see, and you were we were talking about this during the break, was, you know, having a management team that can run your business is super important. And if when you go to sell your business, if that management team's there and you're not necessary, your value will be that much more to whoever is coming in to buy. And you can get that much more out of it and relax knowing that your business is going to succeed without you, I think. That's something that I try to talk with my clients about heavily, is getting them out of the weeds so they can focus on the business rather than work in the business.
Right.
Those are probably the two biggest risks I see right now. But I mean, depending on the industry and what company's being sold, there's just so many things that can happen. I mean, you know, I deal heavily in transportation, the transportation industry, and the pandemic totally disrupted much of that. You know, some companies had great years because, you know, Amazon was delivering packages to everybody's house four times a day. So, you know, trucking and freight movement was great. At the same time, I deal with a number of school bus companies, and they had it rough for a couple of years because the pandemic completely disrupted what they did.
Yeah. You hit on a very key point there when you're talking about the demise of Sears and Kmart. And there are so many more. And you mentioned IP, intellectual property. If you look at a chart of your company composition in the S&P 500 back in the 70s, roughly 90% of the value of a business was tangible stuff, the fixed assets, the things that are that you can touch. Today, 90% of the business value is really wrapped up in intangibles.
Right.
So speak to the power of the intangible asset, which could include, you know, technology and patents and trade name.
Right. So, you know, I'm going to use Apple as an example. I'm not a huge fan of the iPhone, but the iPhone has an extreme market penetration in the United States. Apple hasn't really come out with any new cutting edge technology in a long time. Their name itself, their cult of personality, is worth more now than anything that I think that they're developing or that they have developed. I don't necessarily know what they are developing. And, you know, you can see it there. That's basically a $1 trillion company. And, you know, their income doesn't really support that as a valuation. But people have such, you know, a following for that company, such a like for it, the value is increased. And we've seen it with clients now. We had a client who developed a technology that another company wanted. And if you were to go and buy that technology as something that didn't integrate with what you had, it may not be worth a lot. But his technology, his IP, his intellectual property really was worth a whole lot of money to the right buyer. And he got hundreds of millions of dollars for his IP. I mean, it has created a situation, like you said, where the value in the assets of the company, the tangible assets, the buildings, the trucks, the fixtures, it's really not worth anything anymore comparatively to what you might have from a technology perspective or from a name brand recognition perspective.
Yeah. So don't overlook those IP assets and be sure to protect those IP assets.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, just look at Tesla with Elon Musk. I mean, he's got a company that everybody seems to love, even though he does all kinds of crazy stuff, and it's worth a lot of money, even though it really doesn't make very much money. So
there you go. We'll take you back to the dot-com era, but yes. Let's not go back into that Wayback Machine right now. We'll save that for another day. I want to talk to you about another issue that a lot of business owners fail to consider when thinking about valuation of the business, and that is the concept of valuation discounts. As a privately held business, you don't trade on an exchange, so there's usually a discount for lack of marketability that needs to get discussed. And if we're talking about valuing a minority interest in the business, there's often a discount for the lack of control or for that minority interest. Do you want to speak to those discounts?
Yeah, absolutely. So we'll start with marketability. So what Dave alluded to is that a publicly traded company, you know, if you wanted to go on and buy shares in Microsoft, it's as simple as, you know, going onto your TD Ameritrade account and, hey, I want this. If you want to buy stock in Haefely Flanagan, that doesn't work like that. We don't have that market, that exchange. So what happens is there's a loss in value because of how difficult it would be to trade that, or how difficult it would be to market it to trade it. So when you're looking at that, marketability discounts, depending on the industry and what they can be anywhere from 1% to 90%. But realistically, they fall within a stratified window, say 10 to 30%
yeah.
in general. And the reasoning for that is certain industries are obviously going to be easier to trade than others. You know, if there's ready buyers for your business, even if you're not publicly traded, you know, your marketability discount will be lower. If you are, say, a law firm, your marketability discount may be a lot higher because there's a lot of rules and regulations in selling ownership in a law firm that prevents them from being traded on an open market. From a minority discount ownership perspective, what really happens is if you have control of the company, it's obviously worth a lot more. So if I come to buy Dave Bookbinder's company and I'm buying 51% of it, or if I'm even buying 1%, if that's the controlling shares, that's worth a lot more than if I'm buying a minority interest because I actually have control over what those future cash flows might look like. You know, I have seen minority discounts almost as high as 100%. And in fact, I've written a valuation report similar to that because there was an oppressed minority shareholder who had no control, was getting pushed a K-1 that had a lot of income on it, was never getting distributions from a tax perspective, was trying to get out of it. And realistically, their shares were worth nothing. And our argument, I think, in the lawsuit was really they should have never been allocated any income either because they never get anything. And, you know, it played out that way. However, you know, minority discounts typically are not that high. They can range, you know, again, in a band, you know, we've seen them low to 50%, maybe at the most, you know, falling in the 20 to 35% window, I think is more likely. And what it does is it really equates to bringing that stock into parity because, again, that controlling interest is worth a whole lot more than a minority interest.
Yeah. And first of all, my company's not for sale, not to you or for anybody else. But the key takeaway here is for folks watching and listening, if you're a business owner, just remember that based on the facts and circumstances of what you're doing in a particular situation may trigger the need for applications of certain valuation discounts. Ken, you alluded to something in that conversation about discounts I want to touch on, and that is valuation is, I tell folks, it's fundamental as a corporate finance tool. It's so critical to most business decisions, and obviously, this is what we do for a living, and we're preaching that it's important for business owners to know it, but your valuation experience allows you to bring additional perspective to the conversations you're having with your clients, doesn't it?
It does. I've had clients call me for all kinds of things. And I apply, particularly when they're thinking about acquiring a property, acquiring a business, changing a fundamental piece of their business, it really makes me think and talk to them about what the impact will be on the future of their business, both from a value perspective and what it means, you know, for their lives. Because most of my clients are, you know, family-owned businesses or small controlled businesses with partners that may not be family, but they're close to each other. And, you know, what the impact on their lives may be too, not just from the value perspective of what it looks like in the future, but what's the value to them today? Is it going to be worth it for them? You know, is an extra $1 million 5 years from now worth their sanity over those 5 years? You know, I think that's an important discussion to have. And mm-hmm. my valuation background has really helped me develop those types of conversations with my clients.
Yeah. Ken, for anybody watching, listening, want to learn more about you or how they can get in touch, what's the best way to get you?
Sure. The best way to get me is at my email, ken.may@hfco.com. And you could also try calling our office line and just asking for me. I think my picture's on the website too, but I don't know. I don't know if I look good in that picture. So
looking good here today, bud. I love the pocket square. We were talking about that at the commercial break. We're down to the short strokes here, Ken. We only have a few minutes to go. So I want to use these remaining minutes to just kind of offer tips, tricks, advice, sharing with the audience some of the lessons learned and mistakes to be avoided here in valuation.
So I think one of the things that I've taken away is sometimes the overall final number isn't the most important part. When you're selling or when you're doing evaluation for estate and gift tax returns, trying to accomplish your goal is the most important part, and not focusing on that specific number is going to be really important. That number is your guideline. That's your base, but it's not the end all be all of the conversation. You know, getting there and what it means and how you developed it is going to be just as important, because there's a lot of factors that play into it. And what I mean by that is, you're going to get, say you sell your business, you're going to get a letter of intent from the buyer. The first thing they're going to do is try to knock that number down. That's the highest you're going to get. And all they're going to try to do is beat you up on it. So more importantly than what that number is, you want to make sure that all the fundamentals and everything that led you to that number is shored up so they can't pick it apart. I think that that's one of my biggest takeaways from all the stuff that I've done with valuation. Look, estate and gift tax is great. It's fundamentally necessary, but it's more compliance-based work. You know, it has to be done. The IRS wants it. You know, the family wants it. It needs to be there. You know, when we're talking about selling and buying or selling and acquiring businesses, it's a whole different ball game. And you're really looking at it and you're using this valuation as a baseline, and all the other work that goes into it, helping negotiate the deal, helping understand those fundamentals that built it up, are going to be the most important part.
Yeah, well said. And I'll just add the cherry on that sundae by just reminding everyone, we said earlier, valuation is a forward-looking exercise. Remember that buyers want to know what's going to happen in the future. And I'll throw one more tip in the area of financial reporting in the world of fair value accounting. And we don't have time to go down this rabbit hole, but if you're contemplating doing an acquisition and you're going to be using fair value accounting to record the value of those intangible assets, for example, on the balance sheet, wise to get your valuation professional involved upfront and early so that you can have those conversations about things like market participant assumptions and all that good stuff that goes with that. So, Ken, final word.
Listen to what Dave said. Involve us early, because it's really hard for us to make recommendations and to change things after the fact. If we know about it beforehand, we might recommend something just a little different than you might be doing that could save you a lot of aggravation in the future.
Yeah, and maybe even some money. Ken, we are out of time, but I can't thank you enough for joining us today. You've given me an opportunity to talk about my favorite subject, so thanks for allowing me to do that. It was great doing it with you.
Thank you so much for having me, and you're an awesome part of our team, and I love working with you every day.
Yeah, I'll pay you after the show. Thank you for that. We've been talking about valuing your business today, and my guest was Ken May, who's a partner at Haefely Flanagan. I mentioned that I am also a member of the Haefely Flanagan team. You can find me on their website as well. If you're a business owner and you've enjoyed this conversation and you don't know what your business is worth, you definitely want to reach out to us. You can find both of us on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Haefely Flanagan. They're also a sponsor of today's episode. Be sure to check them out at hfco.com. Lots of other great people there besides the two you've just met here today. Also, thank you for watching and listening. We can't do the program without you. So crush that subscribe button. Stay in touch with all that we're up to. That's all we have for today, folks. We will catch you next time on Behind the Numbers. Take care. Partner and visionary at Haefely Flanagan. And that name may sound familiar because Haefely Flanagan is a sponsor of today's episode. So I want to thank them so much for sponsoring this episode of Behind the Numbers. My name is Dave Bookbinder, and I'm the one that my clients turn to when they want to know what their most important assets are worth. So if you're a business owner and you've enjoyed this conversation and don't know what your business is worth, we should have a conversation. You can find me on LinkedIn. Thank you out there for watching and listening. Can't do it without you. Crush that subscribe button. Stay in touch with all that we're up to. And we'll see you next time on Behind the Numbers.